You are listening to the Stain Gang Men's Basketball Podcast presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers on the Midwestern State Digital Network. We'll take a weekly inside look with Coach Justin Leslie into the men's basketball program. We'll recap last week's games and take a look at this week's opponents. It's the Stain Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Midwestern State Digital Network.
In Texas, whether it's work or play, Ford trucks lead the way. Like the Ford F-150 with best-in-class payload, or the Ford Super Duty with best-in-class towing. Ford trucks come with premium features that make the Ford F-Series America's best-selling truck for 43 years and the best-selling truck in Texas. Upgrade to a new Ford F-Series today only at your Texas Ford dealer. Ford F-Series, built for Texas, built for you. Based on 1977-2019 CY total sales.
It's the Stain Gang Men's Basketball Podcast. It's your host, Trey Reed, joined by Midwestern State head coach Justin Leslie. Another edition this week, and coming off of two incredible basketball games at Dallas Baptist. I tell you what, if they're number 15 in the country, I know the Mustangs have to be somewhere close to that.
Well, yeah, thanks, Trey. It was certainly a wild weekend. Two great college basketball games. It's unfortunate that we came up on the wrong end of both of them there. Certainly we're in the mix with anybody we play with, and I'll look forward to just continuing to just build momentum, keep getting better.
It's interesting. I kind of took this as a compliment to your program. Lone Star Conference named Ricky Lujan as the Offensive Player of the Week and Chandler Jacobs as the Defensive Player of the Week. And then Coach Flickner ended up getting a D2 Coach of the Week. So that means that somebody thinks a lot of the Mustangs program for a number 15 ranked team to had to battle for 2 1-point wins at home.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, they've certainly garnered a lot of attention this week, both in the Lone Star and then nationally and in different areas for the two games. And it's one of those things, like I'm not upset by it, but in order for those to be great wins, it has to be against an equally impressive opponent, on their home floor. And so, we're still flying under the radar, and I'm okay with that. We still have a long way to go. We're nowhere near our potential of who we're going to be as a team and as a program. But it's evident that we're clearly building and heading in the right direction.
What a game that was Friday. And, Pete Stein and I were in Denton trying to follow the game, and you got to see the score go back and forth. The Mustangs held a lead in that through much of the contest, and you look at your scoring in that game, shot 53% as a team, and hit 11 threes, led by Jermaine Carter. Well, what a weekend he had. We'll talk more about him for a Saturday game. He finished with 19 points on 9-13 shooting. Derek Ogechi also with 19 points as well, hit 5 threes. He seemed to like shooting there at the Berg Center.
Yeah, no question. That Friday night's game was a fantastic game. It was close throughout, featured a few big runs in the first half, won by them. Won by us to start the game, then they came back, took the lead, and then we closed it down to take the lead again and led most of the second half in a very, very closely contested game. And then we made one mistake on the offensive end, and then a contested 3-point shot was enough for them to hit, and give Chandler Jacobs credit for making what was a very difficult shot to give them the lead and ultimately the win. But it was a fantastic college basketball game, and so we knew going into Saturday that it was going to be another one of those dogfights.
And what a game that was Saturday. I mean, you go into halftime, it seems like they're hitting every shot in the first half. You're down by 19. You go into the locker room. What are your thoughts there, and how do you end up motivating thinking of the changes you need to make when it seems like just everything's going in for the Patriots?
Well, we suffered through a lot of self-inflicted wounds in that first half. We did, give them credit for making tough shots and making, you know, some big plays. However, on the offensive end, we were just completely, inept in everything that we were trying to do. I mean, we had some guys that were just making decisions and doing some things that were completely out of character, nothing to do with who we are or what we emphasize as a program. And so I kind of gave them the talk at halftime that, you know, I think a lot of folks can relate to, where your parents or someone, a coach, an authority figure in your life, doesn't really yell at you. They just tell you that I'm disappointed in you. And, you know, that oftentimes cuts a lot deeper than just getting emotional or screaming at them. And, you know, and I just told them that it was an unacceptable effort on the defensive end. And offensively, it was just, you know, an unacceptable, you know, decision-making habits that we were displaying out there. And so we just let the coaches did a great job, my assistants, of just adding in some emphasis and areas where we were hurting ourselves that we couldn't continue to do. And then I followed it up with a couple changes that we were going to make. But more than anything, it was, we need to walk out of this locker room with our head up, show some positive body language, some energy, and just an ability to show that we believe in ourselves, you know, more from like I said, that body language, that positive energy, and just a collective buy-in. And so, as we left the tunnel, went out onto the court there, I felt good, that we were at least going to go out and compete. And then we got a couple stops, made a few shots, and now all of a sudden there was a little bit of momentum. And so as soon as we cut it down, I think it was to 11, they called a timeout, and then we're like, okay, we're where we need to be. We've changed the tempo of this game. We've now reestablished what it's going to look like on the defensive end for us. And then from there on out, we just continue to build momentum and ultimately scored 59 points and a half.
And you look at that, you're down 19. Before you get to the midpoint of the second half, Terrell Wilson hits a layup to put you ahead. I mean, but yeah, it's interesting with this group. I know we'll get more into it with some of your post game with Pete Stein, but that has to say a lot for this group to respond that way to their message at halftime.
Sure. Well, there's a belief in our locker room about the work that we've put in to get to this point. We're not better on accident. We're better because we've worked really hard. We're better because there's an amount of character in that locker room with these young men that they trust the process. They know that they've put themselves in a position to succeed. But at the same time, what I'm trying to just get them to understand is they have to respect just what a fine line it is between success and failure when you're playing in the Lone Star, and especially against elite competition. You can do everything right for 39 minutes and 1 minute of lapse is enough to cost you, which we experienced on Friday night. We just had a lapse in the last minute and poof, the game was over. We lost it. The game on Saturday, it was a little different in the fact that we had 20 minutes of a complete disaster. Our first half, there really isn't anything good to say about it. On either end of the floor, it was just terribly disappointing, how we competed, how we executed, but I was happy to see that there was enough pride and respect for the moment that regardless of what happened, they weren't going to roll over and quit. That they believed that they could go out there and chip away and make it happen. And then there's that fight that I was proud of, but, you know, just call it like it is. I mean, you can fight and compete all you want, but if you don't have the horses to go out there and put points on the board, if you don't have the firepower to go get it done, it doesn't matter. And so kind of showing to ourselves that, no, we are, in addition to a team who's going to compete and play hard and be tough, we have the ability to be explosive and hang a lot of points on the board in a short period of time, which with that ability, we should never be out of a basketball game.
And you look at it too, Derek Ogechi, once again, six threes in that game. Is Terrell Wilson that really got it done, or Terrell Wilson?
Yeah,
I'll be good to T. I know he'll give me a hard time.
Yep,
I've had Terrell is a player that has an uncanny knack. I mean, he goes 0-for-6 from three, but he still finishes with 23 points. And I know he had three assists. You'd like to see a few more assists. I know from T, but It seemed like when you needed points down the stretch, it was him or your freshman, Pierre Sanders, who unbelievable in the second half, finishing with 15 points. But those guys really seemed to get into the paint for you.
Correct. Well, you know, there were a lot of interesting dynamics in play. And this, again, speaking to kind of the depth of the group, DBU going into this series was terrified of Luke Hamilton's potential impact on a game. He'd been shooting 50% from three, just an explosive score from behind the arc. And so they showed pretty early on Friday, and then it was consistent throughout Saturday as well, that they were going to have Carson Hughes just hug him wherever he went. And he was very, very heavily guarded at all times. And what that did, in addition to, it limited Luke's offensive output. He's someone who, usually needs that space in order to get his shots off, which is an area he's working on. He's got to find other ways to impact the game. However, he had a significant impact in the games in that his defender, when he was in the corner or up in the slot spacing the floor, was glued to him. And so that created a lot of opportunity for others to drive and get the paint because one help rotation defender was taken out of the play because he was always attached to Luke. And so we were trying to move Luke around in order to occupy those defenders, in order to create some of those drive lanes. And so normally where Terrell or Pierre would be kicking the ball out, they had to take the shot. There wasn't a pass available because with Luke and then the way Derek Ogechi was shooting so well, they were commanding attention on the perimeter. And so that was one of the adjustments where they had to see how it was happening. Terrell in the first half kept getting in the lane and looking to pass, and there's no one to pass. It's like, hey, buddy, it's time to go. You're going to have to start reading this and being a little bit more aggressive. And the passes that you have are going to be to Jaylen Brown or Jermaine Carter down around the basket rather than the traditional three-point looks from the outside.
And one of the speaking of Luke, he hits two threes in that game. He ends up shaking loose for that. But one of the things that we talk about a lot on the podcast is his ability to always produce a really good plus-minus. And even without scoring, he was at plus 12.
No, that's it. And again, it speaks to the impact of good players in your program. He's a high-level shooter. There's no question. And as a result, he's going to garner attention of the defense. And those are things that I can then manipulate to try and attack in some different ways. And so, I'm thrilled that we have Luke. Luke knows that he needs to continue to improve, not just as a shooter. It's in the other areas. It's you look at his assist to turnover ratio on the year. He's a very good passer. We have to find ways of continuing to develop him as someone who can distribute the ball because he draws defenders to him. That's an area where he needs to grow and something we talk about regularly. And he's up for that challenge as well as finding ways to get more done around the basket. If he can do that, then I think that'll be something that continues to open up his three-point shot.
Another thing that seemed to make a big impact on the game was defensively. I know you've been committed to the zone this year, but a little bit of man there in the second half seemed to make a dent in the game.
Yeah, I mean, just call it like it is. We were having just the worst possible time getting to all their shooters in the zone. Dallas Baptist, I often tell people that my goal as a coach is to always have at least three shooters on the floor and at least three guys who can handle the ball. And if you do that, you become very difficult to guard. Well, DBU featured a lineup that it had four shooters at all times. And they were making our rotations long. And they got a rhythm on us. I still think that, we're a zone team. We practice man every day because we play against man from our opponents. And so it wasn't like it was a new adjustment. We have a lot of similar principles. But in terms of staying connected to their shooters and making them play a little bit more in isolation, we thought that our smaller guards, because they were having late in the first half, they basically made the adjustment to have Chandler Jacobs handle the ball a lot more. And so we thought, well, we're just going to go with some smaller guards defending him to try and wear him down a little bit. We thought that we might be able to get to him as the game went on because he played 39 minutes on Friday night, and so we were rotating through those smaller guards to harass him, even in the zone. So we got to halftime and realized that he, you know, his best offense is when he can play with the ball in space, and against longer defenders, he gets more space. And so we just made the change to keep a small guard on him and just up in him, crowding him the entire half, and it really bothered him. And so that was basically why we wanted to make that move, because we could limit the switches where he got favorable matchups to be able to have a rest. And so our goal was to get at his legs, to wear him down a little bit. But old Ricky Lujan stayed fresh.
So you get down to the game, pretty much comes down to the final 18 seconds. You get Chandler Jacobs drives the lane, and Jermaine Carter makes the first of two incredible plays in the late going. He takes a charge to get the ball back, then call a timeout. You go down to hold for the last shot. Mm-hmm. And I know it seems like I've heard you say this before, but I know you said it in the post game where you like to get the ball up with 4 seconds or less and have a shot at the offensive rebound when it's tied. And it was at that point tied at, was it 79? Or was it 89-89?
Yes.
I'm switching games there.
That's it, 89 all.
So Pierre Sanders gets into the lane, gets a shot up on the rim, and then you have Jermaine Carter come back with a second huge play. Comes in. In fact, I believe his left arm is being held at the time. He snags it with his right arm and somehow attempts to get the ball up, and he's fouled on the way up. I mean, what an effort by Jermaine Carter. It seems like that this is something that's a steady exercise of talking about the plays that he can make.
Yeah, honestly, it was a pretty simple game plan for us in that last possession. You know, as I already alluded to, they kind of tipped their hand of how they were going to defend Luke Hamilton and Derek Ogechi, and so we spread them out as far as possible. And then we had Pierre Sanders and Terrell Wilson up at the top. And, you know, I told him, I said, it's a tie game. We're either going to shoot. We're either going to go to overtime or we're going to win. All right, that's the goal. We're not going to leave enough time on the clock for them to have the opportunity to come back up the floor. And so 4 seconds is enough time for us to get a shot up while also giving us the opportunity for an offensive rebound. And so we were kind of picking a matchup that we wanted, whichever of the two guards. We just ran a little false motion to get the guards the ball up at the top, and then to see who was guarding who. And we'd talked about if it was Pierre or if it was Terrell, kind of what they were looking for. And it ended up being Pierre with the matchup that we liked, and he took the paint. He got a good shot up on the glass. That's one of the things. We always want to make sure we get a shot up that has a chance to go in, gives the official an opportunity to make a call on a potential foul, or give us an opportunity for a rebound. You know, that's something that we talk about a lot in our late game scenarios that we drill on in practice. And we were able to do that. Pierre got a fantastic look up and almost went in. And then Jermaine was right in position for the rebound as his man helped on Pierre. And so, you know, at that point, we were feeling pretty good that everything was going according to plan. And then the last 0.6 seconds broke out.
Right. That's such a weird time. And I know that's something that, you know, all that are there probably talking about is like, when you look at it, I was on the baseline at the time, and you could hear whistle, buzzer almost simultaneously. So in my mind, I was like, that's got to be less than half a second. I mean, just
sure
thinking there. But, you know, then, you know, some video might show that there's like less than 0.6, but you know, it's kind of a frustrating thing for me, not to the point of the result. Yeah, I wanted the Mustangs to win, obviously, but when you go, you hope that when you go to a monitor that everything's exact, and that's why we do the things that we do in our league, to try to get to that point. But you had an explanation on that.
Well, as you get down there, you have there's I don't want to use the term like to where it's taken negatively, but there's a human error element. Okay, and the error is on our reaction time, essentially. So an official sees a foul, you know, with his eyes in a split second. And although the whistle blow is quick, the hand signal that goes up immediately is quick, you have to recognize, and it was loud at that given moment in the crowd, the person on the clock has to hear the whistle before he can then push the button. Right. So there's a little bit of lag time that's happening in each of these. And so the NCAA every year publishes a rules book and a case study book. And to go through these things, and on page 103 and 104 of the case book, this scenario is covered. And this is one where the officials basically use all the information that they can gather, because some monitors that you go look at, they're going to have sound. Some will not have sound. It's just video. Some will have the clock showing displayed. There's just a whole lot going. And so they have to use what they have. And so the official who was on the baseline that made the call, you know, he's looking at the moment where he recognizes the foul, and they pause it and look at the clock, and they determined that it was 0.6. And so, you know, in that moment, obviously I'm not in that huddle, but I know what they're doing. That's what they're looking for. Now, do I think that it should have been less or more? Whatever. It's a very difficult thing to adjudicate. At the end of the day, we're up one with 0.6 there in that given situation.
Yeah, what's interesting as far as like historical context in the Lone Star Conference, not the same situation, but a situation like this, Commerce at UT Permian Basin, led to the entire revamp of the replay system, where you had to be HD, had to have a clock and that sort of thing, which in a sense, yes, a negative situation turned into a positive because it made improvements.
Sure.
And that's kind of the way I view it. This, because whenever it's just the question of how far you want to take it, you know, like you have a precision timing system, like where a whistle will stop the clock and that sort of thing. So the question is, the way to fix this situation, I know it's more costly to conference members, but if in this situation, you know, whistle stoppage does it. I mean, that's
it.
But you wonder if that's or you can live with the human error part, which I kind of lean towards, but.
Sure. Yeah. And this is a difficult area to delve into, and you're always going to have folks that are on the right side or wrong side of these, depending how you look at it. And I've been a part of many game situations where they don't have replay. And in that instance, time would have expired. Jermaine Carter would have stepped to the line with, you know, no time or 1/10. And it's very different. And, you know, I remember a game vividly, it would have been in the 2011 or 10-11 year where, you know, I had a similar situation, had a player fouled, no time on the clock. They deemed that it was done at the buzzer. There was no replay, and my guy, we're down one, steps up the line, makes two free throws, and that bus ride home was fantastic. You know, so, you know, give old Reggie Owens credit for those free throws back then. But it's one where it's just challenging. And you just want in any of those situations the officials to do the best that they can. You want the conference and member institutions to be doing the best possible job of providing the resources and ability to just get it right. Because you don't want to have the shoulda, coulda, wouldas, or we got hosed, or, you know, there was a home, you know, like kind of got homered. I don't like that. At the end of the day, you want the players to be able to decide what happens out there and ultimately, you know, earn a victory for their program.
And to be fair, there was nobody at DBU that was attempting anything. I mean,
oh, correct.
I mean, the clock did expire, but that you're talking about 0.2-3 seconds when you hear the whistle.
Correct.
It's going to expire.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And, you know, and also another random dynamic is, you know, because of COVID, you have those glass screens that are up and partitions separating the score table from the action. I mean, every fraction of a second in an instance like this now all of a sudden becomes a big deal.
Right. And then you have another interesting situation. Once you have 0.6, they inbound the ball to half court. And what's interesting in that is that you can give a heads up to say, hey, we're going to call a timeout on a catch. But however, you got to make it audible and visual.
Correct.
To make it. So then it's all judgment. I mean, it's pretty much known if you have a touch, you're going to take 0.3 off.
Well, I believe that's the rule, that the minimum that can come off of the clock when a ball goes in play is 0.3. And so, you know, is that a default, you know, just kind of guess? There were three players from DBU calling timeout, plus their coach. So did they make the signal and call it to the lead official while the official next to the ball in that C position at half court got it? I mean, I don't know. At that moment, unfortunately, all that was going through my mind was we should have been in front of that pass and it shouldn't have gotten through. And so at that moment, I knew that we had made a critical mistake in allowing that pass forward, because I had told the players that where we needed to position ourselves, and we just needed to tip the ball. You don't even need to catch it. Just tip the ball and hit it. Time will expire. And they were able to catch that ball for possession.
And then an incredible inbound pass on a lob to win it at the buzzer. Tough memory there, but what a play for them.
Too many things had to go right in that play. They used multiple actions, and as I'd alluded to, we had been playing our small guards on Chandler Jacobs, their best player, who's this year, you know, figures to be an All-American. He's playing at a very high level, and that's where we thought the ball was going to go. And so we aligned our defense to account for that, and when they showed him in that position and ran the action, we had a guy make a step the wrong direction, and when he turned back to look at Jalen White, he was already gone, and then it was a perfect pass over the top.
And you talk about Luke Hamilton being on the ball. It looked like on video he was so close to getting a hand on the pass.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, we actually practiced those throws ourselves. Because for late game scenarios, you just never know where you're going to need to inbound the ball from or what the situation may call for. And so we have our team basically do tryouts to see who can make passes. And, you know, in my career, I've only had a handful of guys who can consistently place the ball like that. And so I give Carson Hughes a lot of credit. I mean, the pass was the play. I mean, the catch and finish, I mean, it's just over the rim. It was literally just a tip.
Right.
There are a lot of guys that could do that. The pass was the one that was breathtaking, that he was able to get Luke Hamilton, lean in, bust up his rhythm enough just to where he was able to time his, when he landed on the jump, to then throw the pass over the top of him. It was a big time play. And I'll just give him a lot of credit for making that pass.
And then this week, now you get to go to another nationally ranked series against Lubbock Christian. We'll be back in the second half to talk about that. But what a pair of games at Dallas Baptist. I know not the results that we wanted, but it's just incredible to see the team continue to grow, and you just know that those are going to go the Mustangs' way in the future.
Well, there's no question. It's unfortunate, because that's probably a situation where we were in the polls last week, receiving votes, that had we been able to come out of there with a split, or definitely with two wins, we probably find ourselves in the top 25 this week. So we're right there. I'm very excited about who we are and the basketball that we're playing, and I'm really excited looking forward. I'd rather dwell on the positive from this last week and the steps that we're making as a program, as opposed to just, you know, getting in the hole or just dwelling too much negatively on the fact that that we didn't pull those out. But those are going to be character builders and things that are certainly going to help us have sustained success in the future.
Look forward to that future, and we'll be back to talk about Lubbock Christian in the second half. You're listening to the Mustang Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Mustangs Digital Network.
In Texas, whether it's work or play, Ford trucks lead the way. Like the Ford F-150 with best-in-class payload,
or the Ford Super Duty with best-in-class towing. Ford trucks come with premium features that make the Ford F-Series America's best-selling truck for 43 years and the best-selling truck in Texas. Upgrade to a new Ford F-Series today only at your Texas Ford dealer. Ford F-Series, built for Texas, built for you. Based on 1977-2019 CY total sales.
You've welcomed us into your home, from couches to visit on, stoves to cook on, and beds to jump on. Only the best in furniture and appliances for over 70 years. Thank you for making us a part of the family. Proud to be your hometown furniture store since 1944.
It's your style. It's our tradition. Hamilton Bryan.
Whether on the field or on the grill, nobody does game day better than you. The best tailgates start with the best beef, and the best beef is Rancher's Reserve. It's USDA Choice All Angus Beef, so it's more tender, juicy, and flavorful. And that means it's sure to be the talk of your tailgate. Nothing says go team like a tailgate done right. So fire up your grill, tailgaters. We'll see you on game day. Rancher's Reserve, available at Market Street and United Supermarkets, where we do beef the best.
Star Bright Cleaners in Wichita Falls is the best choice for superior quality and service at an unbeatable price. Stop by and see for yourself at our Kemp or Seymour Highway locations. We guarantee you'll feel the difference from drop-off to pickup. Done right, on site, on time, guaranteed. In a hurry? Don't worry. Every Star Bright Cleaners has a convenient drive-thru for express service. Come give us a try today. You'll be glad you did. Star Bright Cleaners, serving Texoma for over 30 years.
You're listening to the Staying Game Men's Basketball Podcast. Your host, Trey Reed, along with Midwestern State head coach Justin Leslie. And Coach, bouncing out of the series against Dallas Baptist, they're ranked number 15. I believe last week, Lubbock Christian was at number 16. And now you're getting a chance to face an unbeaten team at 8-0 on their home floor. And they're coming off of two huge wins over Texas A&M International, beating the Dust Devils 86-38 on Friday and then 83-50 on Saturday. So this is a team that, like a lot of the opponents that you faced recently, is on a roll.
There's no question. Lubbock has been impressive so far this season, not just winning games, but how they've been winning them. I would certainly expect after their performance last week that they'll be ranked even higher in the polls this week. Like you alluded to, they're the only undefeated team in the Lone Star Conference. It's certainly going to be a challenge to go on the road and face them in Lubbock tomorrow night.
And it's a West Division game. This West Division's pretty dang good. I mean, you start out with the Mustangs because that's where I choose to start. And I think that's a pretty
Absolutely.
Good level.
No question.
You have West Texas A&M, Lubbock Christian, and Angelo State, whose record isn't necessarily probably what they want it to be, but they're another quality program as well. So those four teams, that's going to be rough.
No, you're exactly right. Well, and then, you throw in Angelo. I mean, they have the only loss for Texas A&M Kingsville was to Angelo. Yep. You look at Permian Basin, who's also in the division, that yep. just went down on Saturday and beat St. Ed's at St. Ed's, snapping their home win streak. And I don't think there's anyone that would want to make an argument in any way, shape, or form that the other two divisions come close to the West Division. Top to bottom, it has proven to be just very formidable. And so I'm really looking forward to the contests. As I've said before, part of why I came to Midwestern State was the opportunity to compete against, the best competition night in, night out, because ultimately I think that's what's going to prepare you for success on the national level. And so, here it is. we're staring it right in the face. This stretch of games that we have coming up, this promises to be a very tough test, but one that I think we need to continue our development.
It'll be two teams that have definitely been very efficient offensively. Is Lubbock Christian coming in averaging 80.5 points per game? They're shooting 51% as a team.
Yeah. Well, they're averaging 80 points a game, but they actually play a pretty low possession style of basketball. It's not like a team, DBU or West Texas, where they're playing fast, more possessions, getting more shots up, which ultimately usually leads to higher scoring. Lubbock Christian is doing it just through sheer efficiency. Their ability to share the ball to get very high quality looks is unmatched in the Lone Star Conference. They're getting close to 20 assists per game, which is an unheard of number, you know, and just speaks to the overall skill level of their team, that they're not just guys who can shoot. They can pass and they can make good decisions. And so, you know, this, and then their ability to get to the free throw line and convert. It's a very good basketball team that has guys with a high IQ and a good feel that know how to attack their opponents. And so this is going to be a really good test for us to see defensively if we're going to be able to contain our individual matchups and protect the paint, as we like to do.
And they're led by Parker Hicks, who was a Texas Tech transfer. He played for a former Midwestern State alum, Drew Kaufman, in his high school days at Decatur. He's averaging 16 points per game. He's shooting 60% from the field.
Yeah, he's having a phenomenal year so far. Last year, you know, his game was an impact was primarily from the three-point line. He was a guy who, you know, liked to take his bigger defenders out to the perimeter and find ways to shake loose and shoot threes. Well, this year he's added a lot more to his game. You know, he's making less than two threes a game, but he's making up for it by getting a ton done around the basket and in the mid-range. He's really developed his whole game, and as a result, having a fantastic year so far.
And then another returner from last year is Lloyd Daniels. He's a senior guard from Colts Neck, New Jersey. My former assistant, Andrew Byrne, was also from New Jersey and loved the fact that, you know, he would have loved Jermaine Carter because he's sure. Stalling a Jersey guy. But Daniels averaging 15 points per game. He doesn't take a lot of threes, but he makes them when he does. He's like 53%, but he's also shooting 53% from the field as well.
Well, Lloyd Daniels is a terrific player. You know, I think he's quite honestly the key to the game. He's he makes them go. He's a guy that it's kind of funny as you watch him. He consistently takes what most people would classify as bad shots or difficult shots, not necessarily bad, but more higher degree of difficulty. But for him, they're good. He's a difficult shot maker. Things that may be bad for another guy are actually good looks for him. He's got some unorthodox release points. You know, sometimes he'll take off and shoot a shot at his highest possible release point, you know, jumping as high as he can. He'll have other times where he's leaning, looking like he's stumbling over, and he releases it down by his hip, and it goes in just the same. And so that also kind of unorthodox ability to finish gives him an advantage in drawing fouls and getting to the free throw line, where he's very efficient as well. He's just a very dynamic player. He doesn't do it in the traditional way that a lot of you know, big time scores do. It looks different, but it's just as effective nonetheless. You know, got a lot of respect for his game.
And then the other double-figure score for him this year is their sophomore guard from Perth, Australia, Rohan McKenzie. He's averaging 12 points per game. He shoots 54%. That seems to be right down the list there. Just kind of speaks to their efficiency.
Well, Rohan McKenzie is a player that really just brings an added dimension to their roster of someone who can hurt you at multiple levels. He can handle the ball. He's very good at making decisions when he does. But at the same time, he's a very good player off of the ball in terms of cutting, creating angles, and finding opportunities for himself and teammates. And so he's been a really good addition to their team. He's had some big games for them this year so far. And again, it's another one of those players that we have to be prepared to defend at all three levels.
You can't really talk about their offensive efficiency without talking about Cameron Copley. He leads the league in assists per game at 6.4, and he grabs almost five rebounds per game. He doesn't score a lot, but he's the guy that kind of makes it go.
No, you're exactly right. His assist numbers have been impressive, throughout, last year and this year. It's just who he is. He does a very nice job of just getting them in situations where they're playing with a good rhythm and flow to the game. And when push comes to shove, he knows how to find his teammates in their sweet spots.
So this has to be a little different week when you look at their breakdown of how they get it done statistically. They like to play more inside the arc, which seems to be the exception to the rule in the Lone Star Conference, or at least in the West Division. So kind of a little different to prepare for?
There's no question. There's no question. This team, it's a very scary group in that they have not shown this year that they shoot a lot of threes. And quite honestly, I think it's because they haven't needed to. There's no question that they can. I mean, we experienced firsthand last year. I mean, this team basically returns from last year. I mean, this is a very veteran group. It's played together a lot of games that, was an NCAA tournament qualifier last year. When we played against them that last game of the year in the Lone Star Conference tournament, that second half, I thought we did a fair job of taking away the paint, but they showed how explosive they can be from the three-point line. And that's something that these players have shown. They can do it. They can go out and they have multiple guys who could hit three or four threes in a game and really change the dynamic. This year, they've been playing from the lead. They've been playing against a lot of zone teams that have been taking away the three-point shot. And as they've had a lead in almost every game that they've played in this year, it's kind of, to use a baseball analogy, they're hitting singles. When you're playing with the lead, you don't need to go out and hit home runs. You just keep hitting singles. And so they've been taking the low-hanging fruit, which are a lot of those in the paint 12 to 15 footers, which are good shots for several of their guys, as well as a lot of backside cuts that, because they're good passers, they've been able to get. Now, as we try to take those looks away, they may be forced to go more from the perimeter. And, so we're not going to go into this game thinking they can't shoot as a team when we certainly know that they can.
You look at them defensively, I mean, giving up 60 points per game, and they seem to take away the three pretty well. Their opponents are shooting just under 28% and overall 40% from the field. So it seems like they can get it done on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, no question. They have done that. They play a pack line defense. They switch a lot and really collapse on things going into the paint. And so it's going to test us and our philosophy of getting paint touches that we know that's critical for our offensive success. And they're also going to be a team that is going to make us take shots from the outside and dare us to hit them. And I certainly think that we're up to that challenge.
This will be a week that you get a chance to play a home and home,
yeah.
Like kind of a different for the guys. And the women have had that experience with West Texas A&M. Seems weird that we're making a big deal out of it, or at least I am. That this is the typical way that you play games in the Lone Star Conference, not necessarily against the same team. In the past, where you had one home and one away, but it kind of gives you a chance to make those adjustments less on the fly and maybe implement some things in between the games.
Well, there is a definite physical and mental toll that the back-to-back games take. Not just, like I say, from the physical perspective of having to compete hard for 2 minutes, compete hard for 40 minutes on back-to-back days. It makes a Monday practice difficult. You give the guys a Sunday off. On Monday, they're still dragging a little bit. And so there's that component to it. But then from a mental side, that they're just such wild swings that happen between a Friday and Saturday game as they've been happening. And so, you've seen a lot of scores, which we've already talked about, where, you may get one result Friday and then a completely different result on Saturday. That's happened, to us. It's happened around the country with teams that are doing this. And so getting back to being able to have a single game and have some time to process it and practice is something that we haven't experienced yet this year, but I'm certainly looking forward to it. I definitely think it provides for a better experience for the players. without question, playing in the pod format where with back-to-back and the same opponent is the right move for this year due to, you know, the restrictions we have with COVID, without a doubt. But in the grand scheme of things, that does not make for the best student-athlete experience or the – it's just a very challenging situation. And so not having to do that this week is something that I'm welcoming. I'm looking forward to it. Only having to play – I mean, it certainly would have been nice after Friday night's game against DBU to play the next one at home.
Right.
And so I think that with this one, you know, I certainly expect a difficult challenge tomorrow night in Lubbock. But we'll be definitely looking forward to the ability to come home and compete on our home floor on Saturday.
And you talk about Lubbock Christian being the only unbeaten team left in the Lone Star Conference, which means a lot. But with the point system, which was produced, which was published publicly this week for the first time, you take a look at this, and you know, those 1 point games, you know, they hurt. And then you look at this, and the difference between that 1 point. You know, if you win both, you're probably, what, third or fourth in the league. If you win one, you figured out you're sixth with those 2 1-point losses, and you sink to nine. It's just amazing at how much those small things make a difference, especially in this point type of system. I guess they would normally, too, with the record as well.
Yeah, no question. This is a unique situation playing in an unbalanced schedule. But we have to stay patient with it. We're still in January, and the records are still going to be getting compiled all the way through that last week of February. And so we're going to find ourselves in a situation as a conference where the ties are going to be broken, not necessarily by what the teams involved at the top for those top spots are. It's going to be what their opponents do that they've played in December to get over either the 500 or 7,500 threshold or dropping below. And so there's just so many moving parts in this thing that, frankly, I'm not paying an ounce of attention to it. There are too many uncontrollable factors that if I worry about it, it's going to take away from what I should be focusing on to develop my team. If I allow my team to worry about it, they're going to be, again, worrying about things outside of their control. You know, what I've told them from the get-go is you want to win every game that you can, and then you hope that the teams that you beat win games, and you hope that the teams that you don't play lose every game possible, right? It's just one of those, like, beyond that, just let it go. Just let it go. My goal in this whole thing as we process and, you know, the points and the what are proving to be some pretty drastic swings in the placing is we need to be focused on playing our best basketball when the season ends. We need to keep getting better. We need to get to that Lone Star Conference tournament. And at that stage, you know, we want to be playing our best and competing well and ultimately take the point system out of play and control our own destiny.
The only point system that matters is the one at the end. And listening to a different coach on our floor last night when he was asked about what it meant to be the number 9 ranked team in the state, he had an answer that I was expecting. It means absolutely nothing.
So, that's exactly right.
In the way, and it's almost like I was listening to you, coach. To be honest, it's like we're just trying to get better every day, and that's what matters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, being ranked is. It's nice because it's a small validation for what your team has accomplished, and it's a reflection of all the work and sacrifice that's led you to that point. But at the end of the day, that guarantees you nothing moving forward. So it's nice, and it certainly is something that is welcomed when it happens. But all it does is put a bullseye on your chest. Okay, now I want to get to the point to where we have a bullseye on our chest, and then you know what? Then the challenge is different. Then it's to defend your place at the top. You know, that's ultimately where we want to get to. But you know, in the meantime, we just need to keep getting better and do everything we can to put ourselves in a position for success late in the season.
And what a ride this is, and you know. And I hope they listen, but we had a great group of fans behind the bench at Dallas Baptist, and I found out who they were later, and I really just wanted to go give them a high five during the game because they had me jacked up, and I imagine it made an impact to the players, and it turns out it was Jaylen Brown's family. It was incredible. So if you're listening, shout out. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Well, let me tell you, we have some fantastic young men in this program, and you know it's because they've been raised by people who love them, who care about them, and who are still continue to invest in them and who they are. And you know, I love, you know, all the parents in this program are bought into what we're trying to do as a staff and as a program is building their young men into, you know, just in everything that we can on and off the court, you know, so they can be difference makers in this world when they're done. And so our parental support and family support for this group has just been fantastic. They're bought in. They know what the product we're putting on the floor is all about. And as we continue to pick up fans, you know, they're jumping on board and getting on the bandwagon because this is a great group of guys that are fun to cheer for and get behind every day.
The Midwestern State at Lubbock Christian tomorrow night. The women start things at 5:30. The men will play at 7:30. Pete Stein will be on the call tomorrow night for the free audio broadcast. You can listen to on the Mustangs Digital Network, MSUMustangs.com/streaming. All games this year will be on the Lone Star Conference Digital Network at the same address, and that video is available at a cost of $10 for a 24-hour pass. Once again, tomorrow night, women start at 5:30, men follow at 7:30 at Rip Griffin Center in Lubbock. And then on Saturday, the Chaps will make the return trip here. It'll be Lubbock Christian at Midwestern State. Women start at 3:30, followed by the men at 5:30. Look forward to seeing you at DL League and Coliseum. Know you had to buy your tickets online. It's 50% capacity under the dome, and the online tickets are available at msutticketsonline.com. Once again, it's Trey Reed. Glad to have head coach Justin Leslie. It's always fun making these discussions, and look forward to talking about a big win or two over Lubbock Christian next week, Coach. Good luck.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it.
You've been listening to the Midwestern State Staying Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Mustangs Digital Network. Staying Gang Basketball Podcast, presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers, drop weekly on the Midwestern State Digital Network. We invite you to keep up with the podcast on social media at MSU Mustangs on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Want to listen to or download the cast? Go to MSUMustangs.com/podcast. You've been listening to the Staying Gang Podcast, presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers on the Midwestern State Digital Network.